Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. A couple days ago, I was barbecuing. I was having a barbecue. My girlfriend had some family over, and we were having a little daytime Saturday party. And I got a call from a number that I thought was a telemarketer. I was going to pick it up and then hang up and then block the number. That's what I do. That's how I do it. And it was a number that I didn't recognize from Miami. And they said, "Hi, this is Lil Nas X's manager." And I said, "Okay." And I could tell she was sincere right away. And she had gotten my number somehow, she explained. And apparently Lil Nas X is a huge Alvin and the Chipmunks fan. And he had tweeted out earlier that day something to this effect. I'm paraphrasing Lil's tweet. So if my reps don't get me an Alvin and the Chipmunks theme party for my birthday, I'm going to be really sad. Something like that.
That doesn't sound like a very Lil tweet. That sounds like a regular length tweet.
It was a normal tweet from Lil. So they didn't want to disappoint Lil. They didn't want him.
Isn't he a grown man?
Yeah, he's 23.
Okay.
So we did the math and found that he was born in, he was 8 when the movie came out. Isn't that crazy? 8 when that first movie came out. So I dutifully responded. I recorded myself. But then I thought, because she suggested maybe I record happy birthday. I sing happy birthday. But I don't have the computer to do it. It's all digitized, as we've talked about probably too much on the show. And so I found an app, like a chipmunk app, that you can do it yourself. So I sang him happy birthday. Happy birthday to happy birthday, dear Lil Nas X.
Wow. Well, you don't not fulfill Lil Nas X's request.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, you did the right thing.
I thought so. And it was just a little favor. Anyway, here's our little show.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your medium-sized host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
And with me, as always, is my, you're less Lil than I am. You're taller than I am, host.
I'm a little wider than you, too.
Yeah, but you've lost quite a bit of weight and you're still
quite a bit of weight. You make it sound like I had quite a bit to lose. No. I lost maybe 5 pounds.
Oh, really? Well, it's there are pounds that really show.
Quite a bit of weight.
Well, I didn't mean quite a bit. That sounded wrong.
Okay if you're overweight, though. I don't mean to.
Yeah, why would you be offended by this?
I'm not.
Suggestion?
Why are you suggesting I'd
you
be offended?
You seemed incredulous.
No.
You didn't lose that much. And you have a little patch on your nose.
Yeah, I have a zit next to my T zone. Anyway, Lil Nas X.
Why are we talking about Lil Pimples and Lil Nas X? And
that's maybe he'll be a future Lil friend of the show.
Well, of course, I said to the manager.
Nothing's free.
No, you scratch my back. Lil favor for Lil favor. And I suggested that. I sent her a video. I probably look like such a boomer in this video. I was like, "Hey, Lil Nas X, it's Lil Justin Long, and happy birthday."
Can you please change your professional name to Lil Justin Long?
Oh, that'd be so...
That would be really funny.
That'd be funny.
It would make news.
Would I get in trouble for appropriating?
No, because I think there are white Lils. Aren't there?
Oh, yeah, there's Lil Dicky.
Lil Dicky, yeah. He's white.
And we shouldn't be talking about white stuff.
We can talk about white. We're white.
That's true. Oh, no.
We're very white.
That's true. We can definitely talk about that. But I never heard back from them.
Really?
And when I was like, "Well, maybe he could be a guest on I'd love for him to be on the podcast." And she was like, "Yeah, okay." And she was, I could tell she just wanted to get this thing done. She was like, "Yeah, I don't want to deal with anything other than satisfying Lil Nas X's," that's hard to say, Lil Nas X's request.
Your eyes spasm. Why are we talking about Lil Nas X?
Well, because X is the Roman numeral for 10.
Okay.
And two X's would be, if it's Lil Nas XX, which it's not, but that would be 20.
And Lil Nas XXX would be 30 and also scandalous looking.
That'd be a good name for a porn star.
Lil Nas Triple X?
Yeah.
That is funny.
Yeah. Or Big Nas X.
But Double X would be 20.
Yes.
In Roman numerals.
Yes. And one of the most famous bands of the last 30 years is a band called Matchbox 20. And the lead singer of that band is our esteemed guest today. It's Rob Thomas.
Yeah, it's quite a segue you just made from Lil Nas X to, but you could have just said
also a recording
also
artist.
Musician, yeah. Also a very successful musician.
Yep.
But I like the Roman numeral angle. It's clever.
It was probably one of the biggest stretches of an intro.
That's okay. It's worth it because the story was funny.
Yeah, it's a funny story, and yet to be determined how it ends. Maybe he'll be a guest on the show.
Maybe.
Probably not.
So Rob Thomas.
But yes, our current guest.
Rob Thomas was part of the soundtrack to our formative years.
Yep.
And Matchbox 20 was a huge band starting in the late 90s.
Let's forget about it.
And they continue to be a very popular band, and they're still recording together. Still playing shows together.
Those songs are on the radio
all the time.
And there's so many hits that, like, you forget that so many can be attributed. I feel that way about Third Eye Blind a little bit. Like, they have so many. A bunch of those bands.
And a classic collaboration with Santana, Smooth.
Oh, man.
That was, like,
everywhere.
I think it was the number two biggest single of all time.
It was. That you told me that after I did the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And
a monster hit.
It was. So we talk about that. We talk about how the band came to be, how he went from this just a small town Florida boy to one of the biggest bands in the world.
And you had never met him before.
Never met. Obviously been aware of him since I was in high school. And so here he is. Let's hear from him.
Yes.
The hit maker himself. The first member of Matchbox 20 to be on the show. My new friend, I think, Rob Thomas.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do 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 shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, This ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Justin.
Hey, thank you. I'm sorry about being about the time push. It's been a lot of technical difficulties here. It's crazy.
I appreciate the fact that you think that I have something else to do. I really do.
That's a flattering thing to assume. I do assume that.
It makes me feel very, very good that I have some sort of a life outside of just waiting for someone to Zoom me.
That's true. I guess that always does feel good to me too. I try not to correct them. I don't like to set the record straight, but I
I just think, like, if someone's seen you before, they automatically assume that you're very, very busy all the time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, only because, especially somebody like you who has done so much and seems to be, like, ubiquitous, it's there's the assumption that yes, you're always doing something. I would assume that about you.
No, I just try and start little fires every now and then and hope that someone can catch. That's just like, that's my career plan.
So here's what's happening, Rob. Every time I log onto my computer here, I'm in Massachusetts. So it's a nice frozen lake.
Oh, okay. You're over here on my side of the world.
Oh, where are you?
I'm in New York.
Oh, great. Yes. Okay. So, yeah. All right. Well, we should have just done this in person.
My son grew up in Newton.
Oh, no kidding.
It's like Pleasantville, right? Like it is like the place where.
How are you today? Happened. Yeah.
It's just a beautiful, beautiful. Like
good morning, officer.
My son's mother moved them there because she lived in San Francisco with him at the time and wanted and saw that Newton was like voted the safest place to live.
What do you say about that? You can't argue that.
No. And what was great was because I lived here with my wife in New York. Yeah. So that distance was a lot for me, you know, by the time he was like 6 or 7, he was only 3 hours away. So it was a much more manageable situation.
Oh yeah, for sure. But you must have been traveling. When did you stop like really traveling? I mean, in terms of like having kids and being there, was that difficult? Because I imagine with touring and all that must be, I dated a musician and she was just constantly on the road.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I didn't stop really traveling until 2 years ago. Like just before that, I would go out solo one summer, you know, like I remember like I went out with Counting Crows. Like I would go out, you know, solo, and we would play like, and I would play first and then they would play. And then we'd come out with Matchbox the next summer and the Counting Crows would play first, and we'd play. And then I'd go back out again the next summer solo. So I was always going back and forth. But the good thing is, you know, we would take a couple of weeks. He would always come on the road with me. He's a musician. He actually just graduated from Berklee College of Music in Boston.
No kidding. You must get this a lot. It's deceptive because you yourself still look so young. Like I know certain people don't age. You must take care of yourself, but you look young for time.
No, it's really weird. It's really, really odd. I have no clean living skills whatsoever.
Because you did live the life of a rock star. Was it like the stereotypical rock star lifestyle?
I mean, I think parts of it were like, sometimes I feel like I was more of a rock star when I was 16, right?
Yeah, and
I was like living on the road and I was hitchhiking around the country. And so there was this kind of
like a real vagabond.
I felt like Sal from On the Road. You know what I mean?
Yes,
like
totally.
So I just felt like I was living that life. And so,
wow, how romantic.
It seemed sad at the time and it looks sad. Like if I talk to my mother-in-law now, because my mother's passed away.
Yeah.
But if I talk to my mother-in-law, she hates the stories about my childhood because she just wants to grab the younger.
Yes. Yes. Me, yeah. Yeah. You know, well, because it was so dysfunctional, right? I mean, it was so not what your wife is probably grew up with.
Yeah. And you know, but I feel like if you did the math and we did it the other way and I went to Little League and I had a really protective, I wouldn't be doing this.
I would have a nice
job somewhere, you know, in the suburbs of Florida, probably.
That's true, because it was part of it just a means to get out? Was it like a means to escape your living situation?
It was like my mom was really, really young. She grew up in like the deep South in this tobacco town, right?
Wow.
So she gets married at 14 years old. She has my sister at 16 years old. She has me at 21 years old. And somewhere in this time, like computer programming was a brand new thing, right? So she lied about her age and would get this job at the ground floor. And by the time I had gotten older, she had become like the head of quality assurance for Fiserv and Citibank. And she had a really, you know, she got herself up there. But one of the casualties of that was that childhood that she lost, she kind of went back to try and revisit before I was fully formed. I'm like 15, 16 years old. And some days she's gone for days. I don't know where we find her. She's violent sometimes. She's drinking way too much. And it almost felt like I left because I wasn't missed.
You know what I mean? Like, oh my God.
It was like her only way to protect me was this unbelievably strict kind of thing where it was like, you never leave the house. You're always grounded. And so I would rebel against that and, you know, throw giant parties in the house that would wreck the party, you know, that would wreck the house for weeks and, you know, and then justify it because I was like, well, you're never home. And or she would be home and she would leave like her biker boyfriend to stay with me for 3 days. And he would be like, well, let's throw a party. I'd be like, hell yeah, let's throw a party.
Oh my God. These are probably looking back, it must be wild to think that, like, I'm sure these were guys in their like 20s or 30, like probably younger people, because she was so young.
Yeah, totally. And she, you know, she was one of these people, I think, who would kind of become whatever she was dating. So like if she was dating like a businessman, then we lived a nice, you know, life.
Oh,
and
it was wow.
kind of normal, regimented, and family. But family kind of like, remember that movie, the Stepfather, like the horror film?
Yes, yes, yes.
The guy who played Locke in Lost was like, he played the stepfather.
Yes, what is his name? Yes.
I can't remember right now, and I feel bad because he's such a great character. A
good actor, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so it was that kind of thing. But then if she was dating a biker, we were at Bike Week every year, you know what I mean? And we were having like biker parties at our house. So my house was kind of like, all the other kids knew that it was either off limits or anything goes, right? Like at any given time.
That's so interesting. So was your sister more of the grounding kind of maternal? Was she more of a caretaker during that time?
No, you know, my sister's like, I was really, really close to, because, you know, we were children in war together.
Yeah, so, yeah.
She left at 17. So this is a great story too. So she leaves home the last day of her high school, the last day of my sixth grade. She's 5 years older. And she runs away and moves in with her boyfriend in Sarasota, Florida. And he's 21, she's 7. So it's like a recipe for disaster, right?
And where are you at this point? Where in Florida are you?
We just moved to Orlando, to like this kind of a tenement-y apartment building in Orlando. And so my sister leaves. But the funny thing is out of that recipe for disaster, now my sister now has been married for over 30 something years. They're like the closest couple, this guy that she ran away with. Like, it was the best thing that ever happened to her. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I wind up finding music and you know, kind of fast forward into what you were talking about, like rock star versus not rock star. The most rock star thing about it, I think, was the fact that it was 25 years ago and it was all happening privately. Like, whatever was going on, nobody was paying attention to it.
Well, you know? I mean, this has come up a bunch. I mean, I'm going to talk to, I mean, Kevin Bacon and actors from who came up, Rob Lowe came up in the 80s, obviously, like, I mean, he got kind of busted doing it, but like,
yeah, yeah, he was the one guy that did the one guy. That
like, wait, until, what, me?
Up until there was YouTube and internet, it was just like Rob Lowe. He was the only guy.
Right. Yeah? Right. Right. But like, for the most part, it was all being done. And I hear a lot of actors, and I'm sure it's even more true of musicians, that say, well, God, if I had come of age as an actor or rock star or whatever during this time, during such a transparent time, you know, things would have been different. And I can't imagine. I'm sure that is the case. And for you, it happened right before it all changed. It happened right before everybody had cameras.
There's one of my best friends in the world is a photographer out in LA. He actually shot you once. His name is Randall Slavin.
Oh, I know Randall. Yes, of course. Yeah. I know. It's funny. I run into Randall all the time. Yes, he knows every. Of course, he knows every.
Yeah, yes, yeah. He's kind of that guy. He's the one linchpin in a Six Degrees of Everybody game, right? Like, he has been like, he's been one of my best friends for 20 years.
Oh, nice.
And he put out a book called "We All Want Something Beautiful," and the whole idea was that at the time in that time in the 90s. He was like the only guy around that had the camera on. So he has all of these beautiful pictures from, like, you know, him and young Leo and young, you know, Charlize, and like all of this stuff going on. Me and Adam Duritz, you know, 20 years ago, drunk at Adam's house, you know, somewhere in a hot tub. Something like, he's got some continuing pictures that, to his credit, he's never shared with anybody. Right. But he called it in his book. So he wrote it in this book he put out. He called it The Last Good Time. And that's kind of like the way that we always look at it. Like, there was that last, you know, for actors, for musicians, for anybody in the public eye, to be able to make a mistake and that mistake be able to be something that you learn from and not be learning while you're taking public fire for that mistake.
Right.
Know?
Right. That is something that will probably never exist. That is a time.
I mean, I see young, really young, you know, musicians and young actors, and I see them just kind of being young and making mistakes that almost anybody could make. But then being held to some sort of different standard because, you know, because they're famous or because they're almost famous.
I was talking to an actor friend of mine about this, and I said, you know, we both determined that, like, God, if there had been cameras around during our 20s, like, and having to explain, I look back at some of the interviews I did when I was in my 20s, and it's embarrassing only because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know, I didn't have any wisdom. I didn't have an understanding of myself. And so to talk about the world and idea, to be like a mouthpiece for or to be an authority on anything was impossible. It was like,
in your world, like you were thrown pretty early into some pretty big situations. You know what I mean? You were in good films with some really great actors, and you were, you know, so then you were there trying to hold your own in press junkets, you know, with much more seasoned actors at the time.
Yeah. But to your point, it's like, I was able to make a lot of mistakes. I was able to do these things without having to answer for all of them at each one of them. I mean, I'm glad that the world is becoming more aware of, you know, and becoming more transparent, I suppose, but it doesn't allow people to grow in the same way.
We were a band. So when we first started, one of the things about us that like we never really talked about, we were just a band that, you know, if you had our CD in your dorm room, you know, then fan, but we weren't on magazine covers, and we were literally, you know, if they wrote about us, they would talk about the fact that we were this faceless band, that we were this band that sold 10 million records, but nobody knew what we looked like.
Why is that? Why do you think that is?
I just think because we weren't, there was nothing sensational about us. We didn't speak for any disenfranchised group, right? We didn't have, some political, you know, we didn't have another persona outside of if our music spoke to you, you know, that was what we were. So we were just an embodiment of the music that we made. We were there for your weddings and your funerals and your parties and your Saturday nights, Sunday mornings, but like nobody really cared about what we did personally. And at the time, I think we were upset about that and didn't really realize how good that was. You know, and how much?
Yes, totally.
You know, our success didn't hinge on our personalities, which was still forming.
So you look back at that time, and you're young. You want certain trappings of fame that you're not getting. What were the what steps did you take to then get those things, or try to like reverse that? You know, would you look at contemporaries of yours who had maybe flashier public personas, and was that inspiring at all?
We look like a transvestite baseball team, softball team. Like if you saw us, like, I mean, it's so funny. Like I go back and I see pictures.
Not that there's
of us
anything wrong with that.
No, of course not. I mean, it's a fashion choice.
Yes.
And we made it. There was a lot of leather pants, and there was a lot of like see-through velvet shirts, and it was the 90s. And
yes. And were those your choices? I mean, do you have
styles? Yes and no. Like, you know, we had a manager, you know, who was way more advanced than we were, right? This guy, Michael Litton, who had managed David Bowie, and he had managed George Michael. And he had this understanding of the visual aspect of what we did that we didn't care for. You know, and we would have big fights at photo shoots, and he'd be like, he literally once paid our drummer $1,000 just to put on a sweater that he didn't want to put on. And so, but then, you know, there was this sense of like, we became an MTV band when MTV really mattered. And
oh my God, you guys were, you turn on the radio still always. I mean, like you must hear it all the time. You walk into a bar, that has been a regular part of your life for you know, probably more than half the time you've been alive.
I mean, I think it's part of why I feel like big picture, I don't want for anything that I haven't got, right? Because I think I look and I realize that, you know, this music has stood the test of time for a long time, and it's attached itself to people's lives in a very real way, you know? And, that was the goal all along. Like it's the end of a cheesy book that goes, and that was the goal all along.
Yes,
and the boy realizes his dreams. It becomes a beacon of light and flies off.
So you're now flying off into the, well, it's true. It's like, it must be, I guess it's not surreal anymore. I guess you become accustomed to it. Like, it's like, it must be normalized, or is it still weird? Is it still weird to hear? Like it's when I hear someone say it's 3 a.m. I mean, my brain goes immediately to it. That's how indelible some of your lyrics are. I go right to.
I'm more surprised by the amount of people that come up and sing it to me.
Oh.
But also sing it in their version of what they think my voice sounded like in the 90s. So they're always like, "Just put her here, my heart, her. Like, oh, come on.
I bet. No. Well, because that was like the sound. That was like there was that sound. But I just listened to it. It was much clearer than that.
The jarring thing, if you listen to that first record, and obviously if you listen to like my last solo record and my Christmas record, I'm 50 now. So I mean, that's 25, 26 years difference there. So it's like, I'm more comfortable now. You know what I mean? Like as far as performing and singing, like I kind of know what to do with it as an instrument way more than I used to.
Oh, I'm sure. I was just talking to an actor friend. When I hear my voice back then, Jeepers Creepers is a movie that's on during Halloween.
Of course I know that movie. Yeah.
Well, it's hard to watch because I have this kind of like high nasal. I hear high. He's like, I sound like a different person to myself. But you must. I hear your music from back then, and I maybe it's just because I've been listening to it since it you put it out. But it feels mature. It feels it sounds good to me. What about it? How do you feel like it has changed for you, your sound? How would you describe that maturation?
I mean, I think when you're making your first record, especially, you don't really know what you're doing, right? It's a trial and error process, and you're kind of taking your cues from music that you like. You know, like we were, you know, if you're we were big Counting Crows fans, or a big like Live fans, you know, like,
so yeah, that makes sense. You know, yeah.
So whatever we were into, like we have some elements of that, and we had a producer to help us out. And then you start going to your second and third record, and you get a more sense. So by like our third record, we really felt like that was the record that this is what we sound like, because there was nothing else but us going, oh, we want to make this song. We want to make it sound like this. And it was at a time where you could have a conversation about like growing into your third record. It's hard to do that now. If you're a band and you don't find success right off the bat, it's a hard thing to mature into your third record, you know? For a band, especially. I mean, it's sometimes easier. I think they're gifted, you know, pop singers and that have a team of people that write the songs for them, and they're very current, and they have current producers, and that's
more
kind
of a machine. It's a collective. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's its own skill, you know, without a doubt.
Once you're on top, once you're making, you say you're selling 10 million records, and then like, but there's not like a real strong identity to the band. How do you deal with the pressure of trying to stay on top with that second, third album?
The second record, you know, what's funny about it, I think, first is just that you have all of this success, and there's a sense of you're living, you have to live up to it. Mm-hmm. And then you have to live it down, right? Because there's no way that you think you're as good as other people think that you think you are. I've heard you talk about this in some form or another, but it's that feeling of when you're in a bar just minding your own business, and some douche comes over to you and he's like, hey, it's fucking Justin Long. It's fucking Justin. And the guy next to him is like, I don't know who the fuck that. And they're having this conversation right in front of you. And they go, you don't know Justin Long? He's right here. And he's like, I don't give a fuck about this kid. I just want to have my drink. You know, like there's a certain embarrassment that comes with being mid-level famous. Like if you're Beyonce famous, you don't, everybody knows who the fuck you are when you walk in the room. They're right. Probably not because you just bought the room.
Right, but it's true.
When you're just someone who kind of has had success at the job that you have and it's public, there's a lot of, you know, you suffer a lot of indignities that kind of come along with that kind of recognition, you know. So we go through that in this first record, and we start off playing to nobody in these small clubs, and then we're playing arenas all over the world, you know, at the end of this 3-year period after
that's,
you know,
crazy
singles or whatever.
So where do you start? How does that album start out? I mean, for people like trying to understand the progression of that kind of success, you start out.
We were a local band.
Like bars? You'd play bars?
Yeah, we'd play like local bars. And
that's,
you know, sometimes
wild.
We'd travel a little outside of our, you know, we'd go to different university towns around Florida playing Gainesville. And, you know, after a while, if you did well enough, you got a Thursday night, which was like the big night, you know, in a college town. And you could play half covers and half originals, which had to put like 4 1-hour sets. And
my God.
You play all night long, and it was debauchery, and it was so much fun.
But fun, right? You're a teenager, you're in your 20s. Like,
Yeah, everything is good. Like, no matter, everything is better than you ever thought it would be.
Yes,
you
know, because totally.
You live in some shithole town in Florida, right? And so you're like, every place is great. You're like, everywhere you go, you're legitimately glad to be there, and it's the greatest place you've ever been. I went to Atlanta, and I was like, this is the mecca of all, you know, things that are cultural.
Do you miss those? Are those days? Sorry to sidetrack you, but like just to put a pin in that, because I want to hear that. But do you miss that time? Do you romanticize that time? What that was like? And how do you try to like get some of that back?
Yeah, I mean it would be hard to get back, because it's everything about that time has to be mixed in with your lack of knowledge about the world. You know, like there's two things that you need to, I think, to do what you and I do, right? You need to have even if it's not up to scale with some of the people that we've met in our business, you have to have a little bit of narcissism and a little bit of ego, because you have to feel like you're doing something that people should see. You know, like and I think people need to hear that.
That's true.
That's a ballsy move.
That's true.
I have a feeling, and you need to hear it. You know,
Yes. I'm going to tell you about it in this microphone. We're doing it right now.
And then you have to have a willful ignorance to the ability. Like, if you really thought about the odds about making it, you probably wouldn't have done it. But there was a sense. So at the very, very beginning, this whole thing wraps around to, there was a sense of, at the end of it, everybody was like, well, you know, that first record, that's kind of a fluke, you know, the one hit wonder. So, you know, the sophomore record. Like, I remember even I was on a plane and I had seen that we were just at the end of that run. And one of the guys from Hootie and the Blowfish was there. And as we're walking off the plane, I was like, well, you know, it's good to see you. And they're like, yeah, good luck with that second record, man. And
then so
we put out our second record, and then the song Bent comes out, and it's our first number one hit ever right off the bat. And it becomes like the biggest song that we've ever done is the first song on our second record. So then things get interesting. And then it starts to seem like, we didn't realize at the time, we thought that we were successful, but we didn't realize was that first record was the ticket to get on the ride. We weren't even at the party yet, but that was like the thing that said, okay, now come over here, because this is where the big boys are playing.
We talk a lot about health on the show. I'm trying to stay healthy. I know life is short, but I want to extend it for as long as I can. And of course, health is more about diet and exercise, though those two things are very important. It's also about gut health. And I've been taking probiotics. They've helped immensely. They've helped some of my less savory habits. I don't fart as much, okay? But if you have type 2 diabetes, you are going to need a little bit more specific probiotic. That's why Pendulum Therapeutics is so important. It's the first and only biotech company to, one, isolate an important beneficial bacterial strain, and two, put that strain into a convenient new probiotic-rich capsule that is formulated to help manage type 2 diabetes and nurture your body's microbiome. Pendulum Glucose Control is the first and only medical probiotic clinically shown to help manage type 2 diabetes when taken with medication. Over time, people with type 2 diabetes lose the gut bacteria that help them digest fiber and manage blood glucose levels. For those with type 2 diabetes, diet and exercise alone are often not enough to manage it. So the best approach emphasizes diet and exercise and, like we said, a healthy gut microbiome. If you or someone you love has type 2 diabetes, take control of glucose levels with Pendulum Glucose Control. Use code LONG at PendulumLife.com to get 20% off your first month of membership. That's PendulumLife.com. Promo code LONG for 20% off your first month of membership. This episode is sponsored by Ritual. We all have rituals. I have one in the morning that has lately involved protein powder.
The fact is, we all need protein. It's not just about muscles. Protein helps support bone health.
And it satiates?
Yes.
Yes, it's very satisfying. That's how I use it sometimes. If I just want a little, if I'm getting a little rumbly in my tumbly.
As we go through life, protein needs change. So it's important to choose a mix for different life stages.
Ritual's essential protein is a delicious plant-based protein powder with three distinct formulas designed to meet the body's changing protein needs.
There's the Daily Shake 18 Plus, which is a complete amino acid profile featuring choline, an essential nutrient, and common dietary gap.
There's Daily Shake 50 Plus that adds calcium, HMB, to the mix, helping to build and maintain muscle mass for healthy, active aging.
And there's the Daily Shake Pregnancy and Postpartum. It's formulated with extra nutrient support to meet the demands of pregnancy and lactation.
Yes, I bet that can be very demanding, lactation. Are you ready to shake up your protein ritual? Our listeners get 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/short.
Ritual even offers a money-back guarantee if you're not 100% in love.
Visit ritual.com/short, S-H-O-R-T, today for 10% off your first 3 months.
Hello, hello again, shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
So after that first record, are you thinking, especially consider your humble beginnings, are you thinking, this is it? I'm like, I'm getting to stay in, I'm getting to do things that I never thought I'd do. I mean, was that the drive? Did you feel like you had achieved whatever your vision of success was?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but I also think there's a sense of like, well, that looks nice. You know, like you see someone else say, well, that kind of seems like that would be good if
yeah,
I could do
that. You
know?
Yeah. And then you're on the road, then you're opening for certain people. And then you think, well, now I want to be.
Yeah. And you also like, a lot of writers I know, you're kind of fueled with the self-doubt. You know, it's kind of like the distance between the person that you want to be and who you are, that art exists, not the idea of like, I am the shit. You know, like that's not, at least that's not the kind of songs I was writing. I wasn't writing I am the man music. You know, I was writing, you know, like, why, you know, why don't I love myself?
Yes, yeah. But I think that's why people, I mean, looking back, I'm sure it's easy to see now that that's why people connect with it. It's there is a truth in it that is like very universal.
Well, I think it was that and the leather pants. I mean,
and the sweater.
Equal measure.
But what do you also, like, let's face it. I mean, there are certain bands from that time. And that is like the time that I was growing up. That is the time where I was like discovering the world and girls and, you know, the world. And there's a hookiness to it. They're fucking catchy, those songs. Right. When you write something like that, that goes on to become a hit, how quickly do you know? Were there any of those songs that became hits that you knew right away? Were there some that were like surprises? Is it just a mixed bag? Can you ever really know?
I mean, the answer is yes, in the sense that I think we kind of felt like we were doing something special. And especially when when the record was finishing up and we were playing it for people who knew, you know, people in the business, this is kind of, you know, this is, sounds really special, using that word. And I was like, okay. I think even with an idea of success, you don't really know what that means. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I didn't really think about the fact that there was a direct correlation between having a lot of success and you were going to have to start working your ass off. You know, like I didn't think that success meant a lot more 5 o'clock in the morning calls and flying right. and multiple, you know, like just long 17-hour days in the studio. I mean, I just thought it was going to be the highlight reel that I saw for everybody else, you know?
Yeah. Well, what was the appeal as you were going up the ladder? Like what was making you happy doing that? Like, what was it? Being out on the road, was it the freedom of, like, you mentioned Sal? I mean, like, was it that? Was it the romantic idea that you had of like just being out on the road and meeting people?
Yeah, I think carrying that gypsy lifestyle, like continuing that, there was something really cool about that, doing it in this capacity. You know, that whatever that giant mom-sized hole that I had in me from all the stuff that I had gone through, I would get that filled up every night with people. You know, like it would make me feel better about myself, you know, and all I would have to do to get it is do the thing that I love the most in the world. And so when I step out and do that, the reward was huge because it was, you know, people coming up and letting you know, oh my God, I think you're the best. Girls coming and talking to you, you know, that was amazing.
Well, you had mentioned at the bar, now I'm imagining like, oh God, guys at bars can be really tough and I can imagine what they must say to you. But like you had alluded to like some of those moments, like what, how do you respond to somebody who does that? Some jackass who's like, I don't know who he is.
I have to say now it's smooth. It's not like now that's the kind of like, hey, man, it's a hot one. Yeah, I mean, I think people expect less of me now. I remember Smooth being on, like, I get a call from Carlos Santana and he's watching like a television station for this light rock FM thing. With like Terry Garr is like she's speaking, you know, and it's Smooth as a song. And he just calls me up. He's like, I don't know what the hell went wrong. I just don't know what went wrong.
But to meaning like it's everywhere. I mean, that was everywhere.
Well, no, meaning that like, you know, when he wrote Smooth, it was like, it was a sexy song of the summer and hot young girls were dancing to it. And then it became the divorced dad. Like we became the Steely Dan.
Oh, that's funny. You know, that's generation. That's funny.
And then time went on and then it just kind of moved itself just back into popular culture. But I mean, that took a ride, that song.
How do you come to like collaborate with somebody like Carlos Santana? Because I remember thinking like, that's an unusual pairing.
It was. And I just wrote the song. I wasn't supposed to sing on it. And then
he
liked my voice on the demo.
Huh.
And what's funny now is flash forward 20 some odd years later.
And Carlos, let's forget about it. You can't forget about it.
We speak almost every day. Like Carlos.
What? Really? Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, like we maintain this friendship. Like I on the next record, I wrote songs for him and like for him and Mary J. Blige and him and Seal.
How did you come up with Matchbox 20? I've always wondered that. I'm sure you're sick of answering this question. I'm curious.
I've never been asked that.
Well, time to move on then. Unfortunately, it'll never be answered.
No. It's obviously it's a ridiculous name.
I've talked to other, like Darius Rucker, I talked to about Hootie and the Blowfish. Like that story of Hootie and the Blowfish is like, I love those stories. I love the idea of naming things. I keep saying when I think about having a kid, which I hope to do, like I'm always curious how people came up with names for kids and a band that lasts. And Darius was basically like, I kind of had regrets about it. He was like, it's kind of silly. And like, I don't even imagine.
It's funny too, because I had the dubious honor of naming my son and then 20 some odd years later, helping him name his band. So I got to do both.
Oh, funny. That's wild. Yeah. How cool.
So we were, we had a deal before we had a name, because we were in this band called Tap at the Secret, like playing locally, and that band broke up and I got signed on these songs that I was writing, and we needed to kind of form a band, me and the two other guys that were left in Matchbox 20. And so
from Tap at the Secret
Yeah. And so we were like, just brainstorming every kind of shitty, you know, like we just had notebooks of stuff. And this guy came into a bar and he had on a like a soccer jersey that had a big 20 on it. And there was a bunch of patches. And like right at the top was one that said Matchbox. And so it just like read out Matchbox and 20. And I remember like looking over, it was like this Rollins College hangout. Like,
so oh yeah, by Orlando.
Yeah. And so I remember like looking over at these kind of drunk frat boys next to me in the booth. And I was like, let me ask you, like, would you go see a band called Matchbox 20? And he goes, Matchbox 20! And I was like, oh, that sounds cool when you yell it like that. So
you vetted it through drunk frat guys.
Drunken frat boy. Yeah. And then it also had a nice ring to it. Like I imagined at the time, the Kurt Loder test. Like, okay, so
yeah.
Kurt Loder was MTV News. He was like,
he was like the serious one. He was like the Dan Rather.
Of he always looked like, I don't know what these fucking kids are doing, but I'm going to give it to you straight.
Totally. Like,
I can always imagine him going, there? You know, in other news, Matchbox 20 on trial. I was like, yeah, I could see him saying that. I could totally see
that. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, that's really funny. Yes. Yeah, the Kurt Loder test.
Like, that's like explaining to somebody now, like, so I got my abacus out and that was what I decided.
I know. It's funny. Matchbox 20, I've just lived with for so long as a person in the world, digesting what you've put out, it seems like a perfectly, like, I don't think of it as like a good or a bad name, because it's just been so synonymous with music. And it's
Rob and it's Justin, right? I mean, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so sorry. I know you have to go, but we have a lightning round, Rob.
I'm in.
Okay. All right.
I listened to a lot of your podcasts. So you're doing a really, really good job.
Oh man, you alluded to that. That is so kind of you.
Such an eclectic group of people that you interview, and I think you do a really good job individually with all of them. And I feel in pretty good company too, because there's not a whole lot of musicians, and like, you know, being with people like Amy Mann and people like Bon Jovi, that's good company of musicians.
I agree. For me, it's a thrill to get to talk to people such as yourself and Amy, because I've been listening to you for, you know, since I even ever could have conceived of doing anything like this and was ever out really in the public world. So,
and Amy is the man. I mean,
she really is.
She's the best. She is.
Have you worked with her?
I've not. I've admired her. Like, yeah. It was that whole period growing up, like her and Sam Phillips, you know, like just these just badass singer songer-songwriters. And she was, I don't know, she's just always fascinated me with that.
Patty Griffin, I would love to have on the show.
Yes.
There are people, is that an influence? Because I've just started really like getting into country music, like Waylon Jennings and those guys.
I mean, I grew up in South Carolina. So
when
I was really young, I didn't know that there was anything else besides Willie and Waylon and Conway Twitty and Barbara Mandrell and Dolly Parton. I think that was like, you know, the songwriting for me was that story between growing up in like country, just all storytelling songs, right?
Yes.
Little old drinking men writing these beautiful stories. And then I
totally
really got into like the second English invasion, you know, like Echo and the Bunny Men.
Oh, yes.
So there's like this pop storytelling thing that kind of came.
That's interesting. Your look too at the time, just aesthetically, that kind of makes sense. There was a fusion of that. There was, I remember getting into like like the new wave and James and Pulp and those bands.
Let me ask you, I don't want to keep you longer, but I
thought you had to go.
Oh no, I'm fine. I have a session, but they know that I'm coming on late.
Okay. Thank you, Rob. I was late.
So did you, when you were a kid,
yeah,
like what were you the, like, did you cringily ever decide some days, like, you would, it was Wednesday, you would go to bed, and Thursday you'd come to school, and you were like a different person because you like had a new persona you wanted to try on.
Right? That's funny. It's jogging some memories. I do remember doing a persona in church, having a look in church. I remember because that's when a lot of people were, I felt like maybe going to look at me. And so right. I remember, I'll tell you one that's really embarrassing. I remember being aware. I remember being really like thinking Michael J. Fox and Jason Bateman and like Kevin Bacon, guys like that were really cool.
Right.
And I remember thinking that the common denominator, the thing they had in common was that they didn't have like a big upper lip. And I felt like I had really big lips. And so I remember being in church and I going like this, sitting like this and looking around and thinking this look cool. I'm doing a face now where I'm hiding my lip. And I remember thinking it looked cool. I must have looked ridiculous. I remember my mom saying to me once, like, what are you doing with your lip? And kind of teasing me about it like this, like doing that. I remember doing like a British accent after I'd seen, I saw this movie, or an Australian accent after I saw this movie, Gallipoli, that I think Mel Gibson was in. There were moments like that. I guess nothing like a whole new persona, but you would adopt.
I was actually just thinking like you did take it farther than I thought. Like I was thinking like, you know, outfit choices, and you're like tightening your lip and talking with accents, and like you're in the witness protection program. Like you don't want anyone to recognize Justin Long.
Yeah. Like I would do an old time. I would, the people probably thought I was insane. No, but I never changed my, I remember feeling like I didn't have the right clothes. That was always a thing. Like, you know, I didn't have, because I grew up in a town that was like, there were a lot of rich kids in the town. It was, and we didn't have, you know, that kind of money. And so I remember thinking like, that's what it means to be cool, to look a certain way.
I didn't, you know, it's funny. We grew up with no money. And like when we lived in the South in this little town, we didn't realize it because nobody had money.
Oh, right.
We went to Florida. And we were still in a shitty little apartment, but around us were people that had money. And like, I remember the first time I was in school and this hot girl was talking to me and she's like, where do you live? Uh-huh. And I go, oh, we live in a Shady Brook Apartments. And she's like, oh, you must be rich. And I didn't get it until like 10 minutes later. I'm walking down the hallway and I was like, oh shit. I you know what I mean? Like,
she was being sarcastic.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm poor.
Oh, funny. Isn't that wild? And that it should mean something to somebody, that there should be value in that.
Yeah. Like, and what value, like come up to a stranger just to point out the fact that they have so much, you know?
I know, but so many kids behave that way. It's funny. I know.
So many adults still do, Justin.
I know. Isn't that crazy? I know. I love those stories. Now I'm thinking about Dolly Parton, a lot of that great music comes from, and Waylon, and how many of those people grew up so poor, and so many. Darius, not to keep, now he's on my mind, talked about that, how he had nothing, but they, all of those songs, those stories they would tell came out of just being in the house with his, listening to music in the house. That's what they had to do to like entertain themselves. There's something, it's funny. I mean, it's like you had mentioned earlier, which I think is so interesting. Like if you had a normal, you know, by the books upbringing, you know, if your parents had been together, if things had gone like smoothly, what would have happened? I mean, what would you do? You're a smart person. Like, I mean, what
do you think? Even if I had, you know, like you, I'm sure you had to go through this at some point too. Like there was a certain point where I had to consciously say no to things that might become a career.
Oh yeah. And, yeah.
Mm. You know what I mean? Because I had made this decision. But then, you know, as you get older, you know, in this case, being like 18, 19, 20, 21, and all of these viable options to kind of get in on something are going by. And you're like, no, but this is, you know, this is what I got to do. So I'm doing like every other job. I'm doing construction and painting and every restaurant job and like anything that I could quit on a Friday and get a new job on a Monday if I had a gig and they wouldn't let me off, kind of a job, you know? Like I used to make futons and I used to deliver beds. I was a roofer in Florida for 6 months.
Oh, no shit. That's a tough job, I've heard.
Oh, God.
What is next, by the way? What are you working on now?
Oh, so we're actually in the middle of a new Matchbox 20 record.
Oh, no kidding. It's been a while.
Yeah, we weren't going to. Like, our last one, I think, was in 2014. And we were going on tour. And we were just going to put out a song, really. We didn't feel like making a whole record. And I was working on a solo record.
Yeah.
And because of... my wife also, she has immune disease. And so
okay. We're
working with her for like the last 15 years or so. She still can't get vaccinated. We still can't really go outside.
Oh,
so
I toured, bet. Yeah.
We couldn't do the tour this year. And so we moved the tour. So in light of a tour, we were like, you know what? Fuck it. We were already working on some songs. Let's just make a record. So now we're kind of deep in making an album.
Oh, that's exciting. And so you're in the process of that. That's exciting. Isn't that funny when you like, something good did come out of like the, I mean, like, you know, you make the most of a situation like that.
I made a Christmas album that I put out.
That's right.
That was something I got solo album. That I always wanted to do, you know?
Yeah. What is that? There must be a degree of pressure doing a Christmas album, knowing that, I mean, kind of what it's, you're singing iconic songs.
Well, I did half originals.
And half your, yeah.
The covers I did were like, except for one of them, they were kind of like, they were like a Dolly Parton Christmas song and this Ray Charles. They were kind of a little less known, which my label did first.
You know, I bet. Like,
trying to sell songs that I wrote that people don't know, and then other songs that people don't know.
Right. It's like, well, some are covers, but yeah, like covers sort of implies that they're like well known.
Yeah, but that was not the case.
Oh,
yeah.
That's funny.
I was really glad to be able to do it because I've done the same amount of solo records as Matchbox 20.
Wow, no kidding. And what is the difference? Just at a certain point, do you miss the? Is it as simple as like? I miss the gang. I miss doing it with Justin.
Yeah, and I mean, I go solo because there's certain things that I can do that I can't do with the band. There's certain decisions that I make that would get changed in the process of making a record with the band.
Right.
But with the band, there's something that, like, I'm not writing all these songs. Paul's writing a couple songs. Kyle's writing a couple songs. And then, you know, we write some of these together. So it's just, you can't do that alone. Whatever we're going to wind up coming up with is something that I couldn't do alone.
But you still get along with everybody, obviously.
And we love playing live. Like, we don't love the process of making a record together. It gets very, you know, rare. But
yeah.
but we love touring together. Touring together is a blast.
Yeah, that's a very rock sound to make. That's a very rock and roll. Rare.
Yeah. You're like kitty cats. Yes,
the claws come out. But I can imagine playing live. What a thrill that must be. And like, take the feel. It's funny. There's no way to really ask this question, but it's the one I'm always most curious about from somebody such as yourself, somebody who's like a rock star, who's like had the experience of seeing a sea of people and feeling a sea of people knowing what you're playing. I mean, like knowing your work and kind of singing it back to you. I mean, that just must be. That must be a feeling like none other.
It feels like a community every night. Like there's just a little community. It's like a little village, you know, that you've set up in.
And you're the town crier.
Yeah. And people come out and, you know, they're just, it's all a part of their night, you know, like, especially like in those outdoor venues and there's people on the lawn, they've got their blankets and you're a part of their night. It's more than just music. It's a community out there.
Yes. That's cool. Yeah. It must be amazing. And so the tour, then you would tour that album.
So we'll tour. We moved the tour to 2023 the summer. So we just kind of like just replaced all the dates. So fingers crossed.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled BABBEL.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
What is your favorite emoji, Rob? Your go-to?
The winky one, you know, like with the tongue out.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, because, you know, it's good. It helps contextualize.
That's like I'm fucking with you emoji.
Right. So if there's any doubt about like, is he being serious? Winky face. Who was your first celebrity crush?
Alyssa Milano.
Okay. Yes.
Comes the first up a one lot. I can remember.
Yeah, that is it is not an uncommon answer. And I had the occasion to ask her the same question on the show. And she said, Rob Thomas. Yes. But a man named Robert Thomas, who was from her
Ralph Macchio?
I think it was Ralph Macchio. Yeah.
I looked at the shoe. That did a number for me too.
Oh, yes.
And also the sister in Alf. When I was
kid. Elf, yes, of course. What was her name? She was so cute. Yeah.
Huh. I can't remember. She had frizzy hair.
Willie. All I can remember.
I only know Willie. Oh, Willie.
Oh, Willie. Rob, that was the first. I'm so glad I can do this now for you. That was the first impression I remember doing was Max Wright, who played the dad, who was like, I remember being like in second grade or something, being like, Elf. No, Elf, Kate and I were pretty good, right?
That is spot on.
The kids that
you have a muscle memory. You never forget that.
Oh, Alf. He was always exasperated. Yeah. Oh, Alf. Kate and I want to just have a night alone.
That is amazing. That is spot on.
Where's the cat? Why are you looking at me? what a crazy show. By the way, I went back during the pandemic and revisited that show. It's so good.
Really?
Alf, I swear to God, the writing is, it's like there are poignant moments. There's like lessons that like really important, like kind of like political, like social commentary.
On a very special episode of Alf.
Well, it's about when you see it through the lens of like immigration now too. And like, it's the ultimate immigrant tale. Not to be pretentious about Alf, which is probably the first time that's happened on a podcast.
I did my college thesis on that.
What is your favorite? Let's bring it back to the basics. What's your favorite ice cream flavor?
Oh, I like soft serve chocolate vanilla swirl.
Oh, great. Yes. Did they have Carvel in Florida?
No, but I've been here for like 27 years and yeah, give me the fudgy the whale cake.
Oh please. My God! Yeah, by the way, voices. That guy had the most disgusting voice.
Fudgy the whale, it's fudgy the whale, fudgy the whale.
Yes. What a crazy voice to be on the air.
You need to get a spokesperson. Yeah, are you sure you still want to do it? Oh, it's definitely me. How can it not be me? I think about it really quick. I feel like I'm going on, but has it occurred to you that the commercial for Tootsie Roll Pop has not changed since like 1962. Oh,
the licking?
The black and white owl. And yeah. He licks the Tootsie Roll. Like, I just had this idea that like a Tootsie Roll Pop, like every year they go in and they have a marketing meeting. They're like, so listen, commercials, we're going to stick with the owl, right? We're just going to stay with the owl. And everybody's like, yeah, we're going to stay with the owl.
If it ain't broke, hey.
Move on.
Yeah, it's true.
That's how I feel about the guy. Of course I'm going to do that.
Yes, yes.
The voiceover guy.
What is your favorite holiday?
Christmas.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm a Christmas geek.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So that album must have been a long time coming.
Yeah, yeah. When we're big, like we it's all Christmas movies, all Christmas music.
Oh, what is your favorite special of the Christmas specials?
Oh, probably there's the Muppet, the Muppets, so the Muppets did Christmas Carol. They also did one called A Very Muppet Christmas that had like
Michael
David Arquette was in it, and Michael Caine was in.
He was in the Very Muppet. Okay.
No, he was in the Muppet Christmas Carol, Scrooge, and it was and he's it's unbelievable. And he says in an interview that's one of his favorite movies he's ever done, and he's so good in it.
He is so good in that. You're right.
How amazing. He is against those Muppets.
Yes.
It's so heartfelt.
It's funny. I was just talking to, I think it was Simon Pegg on the show, and I said we were talking about the Muppets, how much we love them. We used to have a question about the Muppets, but I said, do you remember Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So your response was the polar opposite of his. So imagine never having heard of Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, and then having somebody mention it. It's a crazy sounding name, and he was like, it was the only time he got a little bit like incredulous, like what he was. I've never heard of that. It was
if you've never heard of the Muppets and you try and explain it to somebody, that's not going to go over.
No, I know.
Oh, you know, with the frog, he's married to the pig. And,
there's the guy with the
bear,
nose.
The comedian bear. You know,
and there's the guy with the hook nose who loves chickens, who like maybe sexually kind of.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're fucking the chickens or not, but.
yeah, the Italian immigrant who throws the sardines.
Yeah.
Ooh, what, New Zealand. I love
Swedish Chef. The Swedish Chef.
Oh, I love the Swedish Chef. I had forgotten this era of the Swedish Chef. Somebody reminded me where he had actual human hands at one point. I mean, I know Swedish Chef. God, did I love them. What is an acclaimed, speaking of movies, an acclaimed movie that you were embarrassed to admit you haven't seen? Like people shame you for, maybe.
Schindler's List.
Okay. Yes, I can see why.
I own it.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm still waiting to get around to it. Don't spoil it.
I won't spoil it. I you know, it's funny. Yeah, it's I understand that. I understand the impulse to, I understand the shame, but I also understand why you haven't seen it, because I feel that way about 12 Years a Slave. I know it's going to be incredible. I know it's a great
movie. I saw 12 Years a Slave. That's what, you know, I'm not trying to like completely shield myself from the past atrocities.
Yeah.
But it was just for some reason, like there was that, it was, you know, that's, and like, I never saw The English Patient, but it just, it's not as much. I think I realize Schindler's List is more required viewing than English Patient.
You know? Yeah. But both acclaimed. I think The English Patient won the Oscar. And I was so into movies at the time, and it was just, I mean, a part of it is like, it's 3 hours, it's long.
Right.
It's an epic, and you,
I
mean,
there's
know.
There's no excuse. I think I've seen Clerks like 5 times. So there's really no excuse.
Well,
timing wise.
But we live it. See, the way I've been consuming things lately, Rob, like I find myself going to the funny things, the easy things, the stuff that I know from the past, because I there's so much bad shit in the world. I kind of don't want to. Like Schindler's List, I should rewatch Schindler's List. And Saving Private Ryan, somebody, that was their movie that they hadn't seen. And,
yeah, and I would like to do that, but Friends is on. And
exactly.
Friends make me happy right now.
Exactly. I get it. But it is a great movie. You should see it. I can't believe you haven't. You should be back. I'm kidding. Well, what is a game show past or present that you would love to be a contestant on?
Was it like the $60,000 pyramid or whatever?
Yes.
Things that, it's kind of like Taboo, right? It's like Taboo.
Yes. I think Michael Strahan, I never remember the dollar amount. Is it $60,000? I think it is.
Yeah, let's say 60,000. Nobody
gives a shit. Okay, that's true. Well, yeah, nobody's listening to this. Do you drink?
I was like, I met with, like, me and Vince Stiller once, hanging outside of a bar, going, you know, listen, we're gonna, you know, he's like, I'm moving to Chappaqua, so we should get together. I said, yeah, but we're not going to. So let's just wave our hands around like this.
That's funny.
Like, we're really gonna make it happen.
Yeah, that's funny. Do you drink coffee or tea? And if so, how do you take it? Coffee?
Yeah.
What? How do you take it?
I like Splenda, like a little thing of Splenda, and but I like the powdered coffee mate.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why. It's just that's my jam.
You must have grown up with that.
No, I don't, like, you know, like if I'm out, you know, I just have a little cream and 2% or a little 2% milk and, you know, sugar. Like, it's not like I can't not drink coffee any other way. But when I'm home, that's my jam, because I drink a lot of coffee at home.
Yeah, it always reminds me of a moment of The Big Lebowski where he's mixing himself. I think he uses the powdered kind.
That's some pretty redneck shit right there. I'm not gonna
If you could learn another language, what would it be?
My wife would be a lot happier if I learned Spanish, and I never did.
What is your favorite cereal, Rob?
Honey Nut Cheerios is what I buy.
Okay.
But Lucky Charms is what I don't buy because it's my favorite.
I
have a habit of walking by and like 7 times a day and just pouring dry cereal into my hand and eating some.
But like, I get it, because the Honey Nut Cheerios satisfies that, like, there's enough of a sweetness.
Right. But the other thing is like I would just go crazy on it.
If you had to choose a different first name besides Rob, what would it be?
Me and Randall, I think we named ourselves Ace and Razor. So I think I would be. You know that it comes equipped with finger guns.
That's funny. Who's Ace and who's Razor? Not that it matters.
I'm Ace.
Okay, that makes sense. If you had a sandwich named after you, what would be on it? The Rob Thomas. I'll take a Rob Thomas, like a 6-inch Rob Thomas.
I think I would just steal another famous sandwich and put my name on it, because that's just how I roll. Like, I would just be like, they're like, oh, isn't this just like an Italian sub? And I'd be like, no, this is the Rob.
No, like, because you have to make it slightly different to make it the Rob. Like, add?
Let's say like good Bronx bread, some salami, some melted imported Swiss.
Oh, wow, this sounds delicious. Yeah.
Maybe, definitely some tomato. And you know, maybe tomatoes stay on it hot, like when you make a grilled cheese.
Yes. It gets a little mushy. Cold.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That sounds like that could be really good.
Nice. What is your favorite Tom Hanks movie?
Joe Versus the Volcano.
That's crazy. I just talked to Adam Pally about that. How it's such an underrated. I haven't seen it in so long. He could not. Movie. Yes. As does he. How funny.
What's funny is I once met up with Tom Hanks at this event. We were talking. And I told him that. And he told me that it's one of his favorite movies as well.
Oh, wow. Was that Frank Oz? It's Meg Ryan, right? It's
Meg Ryan. Yeah, she plays 3 different parts.
Oh, wow.
And it's the silliest movie of all time, but there's something to me that's just unbelievably sweet. And just the meter is kind of amazing. And he's so likable. Like, I don't know. I'm so in love with that
movie. That's so fun. I'm watching Joe versus. I got to watch that now. Because you never really see it. It's rarely a thing that's like, you know, those classic comedies are on all the time.
It's one that, like, if it's on, I it's like, you know, that and the Big Lebowski, you know, like in our house. Like,
yes, yes, totally. Yeah. Would you rather take a time machine to the past or the future, Rob?
Oh, I guess the future, right?
Yeah, because
that's the only, like, I've seen, you know, the past. And before I was born, I've done a lot of, you know, read a lot about history. It seems like a whole lot of shit was going on back then.
That's true. Pretty scary.
And I'm only going to get to see a finite amount of time ahead of me. So I'd like to kind of shoot ahead past
that. That's a good point. Okay. That's a very good point. Are you a night or a morning person?
Night.
Yeah. Beach or mountains do you prefer?
Beach.
And do you have a preference to toilet roll over or under?
Over.
Yeah. Your wife?
I think if under is like the sign of a psychopath.
Okay. And please finish this sentence, Rob Thomas. Life is short, so...
be good to each other.
Well said. Yes. I can't thank you enough for doing this, for taking the time, I was excited to talk to you, but now I'm like, I'm even more grateful that I did, because this is just fun. And I've loved your music for so long.
I'm really glad. I'm glad to be a part of your history now. That's very nice.
Yeah. Oh man. It's been a pleasure having you on. I'm glad you wanted to do it. And let's make a plan. Let's wave our hands around and make a plan.
Oh yeah, dude, let's do it. You're in Boston. We should
I'm in New York. I'm close. It would be great to run into you in the world. I look forward to it.
Brother.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, man, for your time.
Well, that just happened. So that just happened.
Oh, that's such a bad impression.
Well, let's forget about it.
Yeah, but it's not that. No, I know that. It's funny he laughed about how people do that.
No, I know.
I don't think he sounds like that.
Maybe he doesn't. No, in fact, we just talked about
it. He sounds more like Adam Duritz in Counting Crows, who I don't think sounds like that either.
Yeah, it's a little bit more neutral than that. That was.
I didn't know they toured together. That
makes sense.
It does make sense.
That was just such a, like you said, such a popular sound that, like, I guess from Pearl Jam.
Yeah,
Pearl and Jam. Creed. I mean, a lot of those bands kind of sound like that.
See, Creed sounds more like that to me, but I don't think Rob Thomas did. I don't know.
No, I don't think he did.
Or else forget him. You sang that back to him.
About it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Or like kind of like a few minutes after he had said, people do that. Yeah. They like come up to him annoy him by singing. And you, you did the same thing.
It must be so weird.
Or else forget about it.
Well, because it's, you know, it really is in my song. Some of those phrases are in my head as those songs. That's how ubiquitous, that's how popular they were.
What a crazy upbringing he had. How turbulent it was and like what he went through. It always amazes me when people have upbringings like that and then they end up so normal.
So well adjusted and like.
And interesting and like.
Well,
he seems like a normal guy. Like, he seems like a guy you'd be friends with.
He'd be fun to hang out with. Yeah. I was thinking that. Yeah. It was easy.
That would be a cool friend for you to have, I think.
Yeah. I felt like we could really, it seemed like by the end, it was like, oh yeah, like let's hang out sometime.
I think that because you got along well and it's like,
yeah,
you have enough actor friends. Let's face it at this point.
I know.
It'd be cool to have a musician friend like
that. It would be cool.
You confessed to him that you used to hide your big lips in church. And do you remember saying this?
Yes.
And I was wondering two things. One, do you still feel at all insecure about the size of your lips? And two, who were you trying to look good for at church? Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. I think there was, there was always a girl nearby that I, you know, wanted to look good for. But there was probably some girl. It was probably a family. I'm trying to remember.
Was it just like your cool face that we made fun of you for?
Yes.
Like your handsome face?
Well, it was more extreme.
Just like your Speedman face?
Yeah, like Max Minghella, like our friends back then would call it laser face. Remember that?
They
would call like cool looking guys laser faces.
Like Scott Eastwood.
Scott Eastwood.
Laser face.
Yes, Scott Eastwood. Like even James Dean, like there were guys back then that had laser face who were like,
sure.
Looked Josh Hartnett has laser face. It looks like they're in pain. They're so handsome that they're struck.
It's like painful. It's like they're so handsome and beautiful that they're like a bright light.
Yeah.
That's shining.
It's shining back into their face. Yeah. That they're like.
So you tried to do that basically.
I guess so. Yeah, basically. I probably had an eyebrow thing going. Uh-huh. But I remember definitely hiding my lips like this. Like this. I look like this.
Well, it's a great look. You should do that more.
I must have looked really cool. But no, I'm not. To answer the first part, I'm not self-conscious about my lips. I guess now I like having big lips. Not big lips. But
all right, I wish you hadn't said that. I like how you try to name some of the other Matchbox 20 guys, and you're like,
oh,
you're like, it must be so good to get back together with those guys, you know, like Trumpin and Sampa.
No, I.
You said Justin, right?
Justin, yes.
But you were like, Justin and Fred.
No, he had referenced, as a joke, me doing it with something with me. And I mistakenly thought he was talking about a member of the band.
Oh.
So I remembered that and I was like, but after I said it, I saw that he didn't register any. He seemed kind of confused for a minute.
Oh, that makes sense.
So I don't think there is a Justin in the band.
No, because then he, like,
he listed
30 seconds
them.
Later, he
out
listed
of,
them and I
out
think.
Out of kindness. I think to like, I think he knew that I didn't.
I know, think so too. Maybe.
Which is a really nice move. I liked him a lot.
Well, I hope you're friends with them one day.
Yeah, me too.
And not just podcast friends.
I know. I have a lot of podcasts.
Chances are you're just going to be podcast friends.
Chances are.
But you never know.
Nothing wrong with that.
But like, you guys have a good, like, nice I could connection. See you guys having a good time out.
Yeah, me too.
Let's read a letter.
Okay. From Bree B. Breeb. Bree B. Subject, letter with, would you rather? Hello there, boys. My name is Sabrina Boker. And I'm from St. Louis, but I'm a Louis or Louis? Do you say Louis?
I say Louis.
You do?
Yep.
St. Louis. But I'm a freshman attending Northern Arizona University.
Lucky.
Yeah, I know. I have to say that I never liked podcasts till I saw y'all's pop up on my Spotify account. Oh, I'm glad ours did pop up. Due to my unnecessary deep interest in actors and Justin's comedy work, I couldn't resist. Yes. All right. After spending my entire work shift listening to the conversations you have with the countless actors I've always loved and looked up to, you guys helped me realize that you are all just as normal as the rest of the world trying to get by. I'm glad we made you realize that. And it's so nice that you like my comedy work. I kind of breezed over that.
Maybe she likes the same thing that Lil Nas X likes.
Yes, perhaps.
Maybe she's a chipmunk. Chipmunkette? Chipmunk.
Chipette? Chip. It honestly makes me want to become some sort of famous just so I could sit and chat with you guys about life. You guys brighten. Well, why would you have to be famous to do that?
To be on the show.
I see. Yeah. You guys, which sucks. I mean, it would be nice to talk to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel like we are kind of talking to her. Like we're engaging with her in a little
bit. We are.
Yeah.
You don't have to get so defensive.
Okay. You guys brighten every workday for me, and I love the chaotic energy of Justin's start, middle, and end. Thanks, Bree. Thank you, chaotic energy.
You're like a Tasmanian devil.
Yeah, yes. A little Tigger. I had some Tigger energy this week. Not to mention the criticism between you two reminding me of my sister and I. Thank you for all of your comedy and inspiration. Oh, thanks, Bree. You are greatly appreciated by a Gen Zer. So here are some would you rather questions.
Cool.
I like being appreciated by a Gen Zer.
Me too.
Yes. I prefer, I mean, I love old people and
I respect old people.
Them, but to be appreciated by somebody younger.
Absolutely. Just, you know why? You know why?
I think it's because they have more time in the world.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting.
They have their finger on the pulse of what's happening now.
That's part of it. But for me, it's because I think that's the group that I don't feel connected to the most.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
So it's nice to know that.
That you reach somebody like that.
You know that I've reached someone, but that like.
But they connect with
They
you.
Don't think I'm some old boomer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, most probably do.
Exactly. So when one doesn't, it's like, oh,
yeah,
that's
I know.
Nice. What
I
a
know.
Breath of fresh air.
I know. What is that? Maybe just to be connected more. Maybe that's why people like babies and like young people. Maybe that's why kids are nice to be
I
around.
I don't care so much about what babies think of me.
Not think
they,
of you,
they don't
but like,
have much of an opinion yet.
Not their opinion of
but
you.
But like 20-year-olds.
Yes, but I just mean like the energy of being around a young, like youthful energy.
Yeah, of course.
Yes, I know. I don't care about an infant's opinion. Isn't that funny that like...
Like an infant I'm not related to, I don't care at all what they think of me.
No, I know.
I mean, in the moment, you want the moment, them to smile yeah. and be positive, but...
But other than that...
Yeah, because you know they're not going to remember you.
Right. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, we digress.
Would you... So, okay, here we... Yes, Bree has some would you rather. Would you rather have to impersonate every single person you meet as a first impression? I often do that anyway. Or never be able to impersonate anyone ever again? Wow, that is a great question. Okay, let's see here.
And this, I'm assuming it's to their face, right?
I think so. Would you rather have to impersonate every single person you meet as a first impression? Yeah. I think so.
But then does the second option mean that you can't
ever even, impersonate anyone?
But even
ever.
Like behind their back?
Oh yeah, I think so. That's
okay.
How I'm reading.
Okay.
Because that would make it difficult. That would be real pressure.
One more question, sorry, yeah. Just to get a handle on this. Do you think it means like when she says meeting someone?
Yes.
Do you think that includes like really quick, you're at a party and your friend is introducing you to five people?
I think so.
And you have to do an impression of them, all five of us. Or is it just like a real meeting, like a conversation meeting?
I think meet. Like, this is my friend Greg. Oh, hey. And you have to be like, hey, Greg.
Oh, man. I would definitely, that gives me anxiety thinking about it. I would definitely never do an impression of anyone.
Yeah.
I'd learn to live with it.
Yeah, I guess I would.
But if meeting is just like a meeting where you're like getting to know someone and you have to slip in an impression.
No, I mean, how do you?
I think I might keep the impression. That might be.
Would
fun.
You rather have to impersonate every single person you meet as a first impression? I think it's every single person.
I would definitely not. I mean,
you get it, but
it's
you get
different
punched.
For you, because you have more of an instinct to do impressions.
It's
much easier for me to answer this.
It's very difficult for me to answer. It's a really tough one.
In fact,
one.
I would maybe say that you might not be able to resist.
I don't think I
like,
could.
You might have to keep the impressions.
I think I'd have to, and just. It would be awkward occasionally, obviously. It'd be disrespectful.
Especially if you were meeting like the Pope or something.
Oh my God.
Or someone who has like...
Oh boy.
Like you know...
An accent.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Man.
That'd be tough.
That would be tough.
That's why you can't pick that. Because then...
Who do I meet? What dignitaries do I meet with
accents? No, and people who have like disabilities and stuff.
Oh God.
You would... Yeah, you would like hurt a lot of people.
Oh,
so you would
right.
have to give up impressions.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
I didn't think about disabilities or, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a great question, Bree. I think I would have to, you're right, because of the potentially. Offensive.
Sorry to point that out.
Yeah.
But that is.
But it is a huge bummer.
It will happen in life.
Yeah, I know. I'll meet somebody with, yeah. So here's another one. Would you rather never be able to apologize again? Wow. These are good, but show an endless face of remorse.
Endless?
Endless.
Like when you're sorry for something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not for the remainder of your life, yeah. I'm guessing.
Okay.
Or apologize for everything, but never look like you mean it.
Oh.
That's a good question.
That is interesting.
Wow. Uh-huh.
This is my remorse face.
It's like cutesy. Why is it like cutesy?
No. Well, you make a remorse face. That's cutesy too.
I guess remorse is cute. Yeah.
How about this?
That's bash. That's cute. You're like, bashful.
Well, I'm cute.
Yeah. Remorse face is hard without.
What's a remorse face?
I don't know. It's hard to not look kind of cartoonishly cute. Okay, so but how would you apologize
without
and look like and but never look like you mean it? So like,
sorry about that.
See, but then it would sound like an insincere apology. It's hard to like not make your face look the way you.
I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry about that.
I'm really sorry about that.
Picture like
look, I'm smiling. I'm really sorry about
picture
that.
Picture Ryan Phillippe apologizing for something.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm very sorry about that.
I apologize for my pillowy lips.
You know, I would.
It's really. I think it can be done.
I think, but if it can be done, I think words are. It's easier to communicate with words than your face. So I think it's just more. I think it's more efficient.
Yeah.
So I would be able to
apologize. Yeah. There'd be a way to do it if you looked like you didn't mean it. To look like you never mean it is like, I'm so sorry. Like you'd be smiling, I guess.
Yeah.
It'd be smiling. I'm so sorry.
But then you'd have to say like, no, I know that I look like this right now, but yeah. I swear to God, I'm sorry.
These are both really tough.
It's tough.
Anyway, and then Bree says, thank you again, Sabrina Boker. Thank you, Sabrina.
I don't know Bree was short for Sabrina. I guess so.
Sabrina.
Well, I thought it was Brianna. Bree.
Sabrina. Sabrina.
Yeah, that makes sense. Bree.
Yeah. Or yeah. Brianna, I'm sure, uh-huh. too. Sabrina. Sabrina's a great name, but I would go with Bree, too, if I were a Sabrina.
That's a good letter.
Yeah. Oh, great letter. And she's a freshman.
And not just because she's Gen Z and she likes the show.
I know. Spread the word.
But that doesn't hurt.
That does not hurt. Spread the word over there in let's give Northern Arizona University a shout out.
Yeah.
I wonder what their mascot is.
All right. While you look it up, I'm going to tell people how to write into the show.
It's
lifeisshort@wondery.com. And you don't have to be Gen Z. And
you don't have to go to the University of Northern Arizona. It's in Flagstaff.
Cool.
Which I've been through. And their mascot is Louie the Lumberjack.
Well, that's cool.
A lumberjack? Huh, I wonder why.
It's a good mascot.
It is a good mascot. What was your mascot at Colgate?
Raiders.
The Raiders?
It was the Red Raiders when I was a sophomore, and they changed the name because it was deemed offensive.
Oh, Red as
so now it's just Raiders.
Oh, wow.
Do you know they changed the name of the Cleveland Indians and the Washington Redskins?
Commanders, I know.
Yeah.
Commanders? Washington Commanders?
I think so.
I am not.
And they changed the Cleveland Indians too. The Guardians.
The Guardians?
I think it's the Cleveland Guardians.
The Guardians?
Yeah.
Guardians of what?
I mean, that mascot was super offensive.
Oh, it really was.
The Cleveland Indians mascot.
I can't believe they kept that for so long.
And Redskins, obviously. Like
the difference between the Washington Redskins mascot and the Cleveland Indians is pretty major, I think, the mascots.
Yes. One is more authentic looking.
Authentic and kind of like heroic looking.
Right. Whereas the Cleveland Indians is like, looks mocking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, so the Cleveland Guardians.
I'm pretty sure. I know they changed the name. I'm pretty sure it's the Guardians.
Who do you think the Jets are going to pick?
They got two picks. They got
number four
and number 10.
There's an amazing.
They need a receiver. They need a
pass rusher.
They need a pass rusher.
Yeah, there's an amazing pass rusher out of
Oregon.
Is that him? He's
it's like Thibodeau or.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Oh, man.
Anyway.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, back to the show.
So thanks, thanks, Rob Thomas.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
Hopefully, Justin's future friend,
and yours.
Hopefully, my future acquaintance.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think I have the chops to be his friend.
Oh,
to be honest with you,
no, he doesn't seem like he cares about like what fame.
He listens to the show sometimes.
He
does. So maybe he likes me.
I bet he does.
Or maybe he fast forwards through the beginning.
Well, Rob, if you're listening, write in and let us know what your favorite part is.
Yeah, it's lifeisshort@wondery.com.
And by the way,
feel free to write in. You don't have to be Gen Z.
Or in Matchbox 20.
Right, but you could be in Matchbox 20 and write in.
Yeah. Thank you, Rob. That was such a great talk. I hope you're still listening. And thanks to Bree for that great letter and to all of you for listening. All the lumberjacks over in northern Arizona.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Oh, and the Brewers at Vassar and the Raiders up at Colgate.
That's right. And the Fairfield Prep Jesuits.
Yes.
Our alma mater, our high school.
A lot of shout outs.
Yeah.
I like ending shows with shout outs. So thank you.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long, and it is co-hosted and produced by you,
Christian Long.
It's also produced by Megan
V.
Monaco and Katie
V.
Allen, and senior producer is Michelle
Niche.
Mans. Senior producer,
audio engineer
is
Sergio Enriquez.
And the big man,
executive producer,
yes,
Marshall Louis. The big company called Wondering.
Yes.
Bye.
So you're supposed to call them what?
Church of Latter-day Saints.
But what do you call a person in the church?
The Latter-day Saint.
He's a Latter-day Saint. He or she is a Latter-day Saint? Yeah. Seems like a lot of... That seems like a mouthful.
Well, just LDS.
LDS. An LDSer? I don't know if you can... That type is identifiable.
Yeah, I'm just...
Have a Mormon ever got... Or an LDSer ever been upset with you for saying Mormon?
No, because they know me.
This? Huh? Where'd you hear this that they don't like?
Because
it?
I got a good friend of mine who's a Latter-day Saint.
Oh, and he said I don't like to be called Mormon.
Right. He's one of the big time elders. So Utah. Yeah.
He's one of the eldest ones.
Yeah.
How old do you have to be an elder?
Well, you could be any age. It's just being how long you've been connected with the church.
Okay. So you could be like a 15-year-old elder.
No, you couldn't do that.
Oh.
You'd have to have some college, go to the graduate from the college.
But you don't have to be like an old person to be an elder.
No.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, 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 where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.